The road ahead feels certain. But what if it wasn't? One subtle shift in history, one name erased, and everything changes. Because this car didn't just exist, it shaped the road itself. The BMW 02 Series, a car weighing just shy of 1,000 kilograms, independent suspension, front disc brakes, it carved corners like nothing else in its price range. Car and driver called it one of modern civilization's all-time best ways to get somewhere sitting down. Look around you. Would any of these cars exist as they are now? Would you be driving what you're driving? Would you even care about cars at all, if this car never existed? Before we can understand what we might have lost, we need to define what was at stake. Let's go back to the 1960s. Mercedes built tanks disguised as luxury cars. Porsche made fast sports cars that were fun, but cramped, expensive, and unforgiving at the limit. And Jaguar's idea of sportiness was a leather armchair with a big engine. Meanwhile, America was deep in the muscle car era. Pontiac GTO, Chevrolet Chevelle SS, and Ford Mustang redefined performance. Massive V8s and relatively affordable prices made performance accessible in a distinctly American way. But muscle cars were built for the long American highways, not the twisties. Solid rear axles, soft suspension, and vague steering made them sloppy in corners. Not that America was oblivious to handling, Chevrolet's Corvette proved US engineers understood vehicle dynamics, but for the masses, it was all about horsepower, not apexes and balance. Performance cars did exist, but they all came with trade-offs. The Italian-British manufacturers built weekend toys that punished you on daily drives. Speed came at the cost of comfort, reliability, and practicality. If you wanted a fun car, you had to be willing to suffer for it. But what the market didn't yet know, but needed, was a different approach. Cars that balanced performance with everyday usability. This is where several manufacturers began experimenting, with BMW making this philosophy central to their identity. Perfect 50-50 weight distribution became their obsession. Engine placement, suspension geometry, even the gas tank's location, every detail was engineered for balance. But wait, actually, the story doesn't really start with a BMW. You see, Alfa Romeo was already onto something. First with the 1900 and Giulietta in the 50s, and then definitely with the Giulia in 1962. The Giulia wasn't just another sedan, it was a revelation. Light, powerful, and fun, it packed a powerful rev-happy twin-cam engine and a 5-speed gearbox, years ahead of its time. But more than just practical, it was a true driver's car. So, why didn't the Alfa change the world? You see, they just couldn't keep the momentum. Financial struggles, inconsistent quality, and a limited global presence held them back. By the 1980s, Alfa was retreating from the major markets, shifting towards cheaper front-wheel drive platforms. The blueprint for the modern sports sedan was there, but Alfa unfortunately wasn't the one to carry it forward. That's where BMW stepped in. Their Neue Klasse lineup from 1961 to 1972, with rear-wheel drive and independent rear suspension, was already exploring similar territory. But in 1966, BMW took the Neue Klasse sedan platform, shortened it, and filled a crucial gap in their lineup. That's when the 02 Series was born. It wasn't the first sports sedan, but it was the car that made the world pay attention. Meanwhile, across the world, Nissan was watching. Their response? The Datsun 510, introduced in 1968. A car that literally took BMW's engineering philosophy and applied it to an affordable Japanese sedan. It was so good that the enthusiasts started calling it the Japanese 2002, or the poor man's 2002. At the same time, Nissan had inherited the Skyline project from the Prince Motor Company. The first Nissan-badged Skyline GT launched that same year, and just a year later, it evolved into the legendary Skyline GTR. But unlike BMW's balanced sports sedans, the GTR took a more aggressive, track-focused approach, using a high-revving inline-six derived from Prince's racing program. So, if Alfa started it, and Nissan kinda copied the 02 with the 510, but also kind of had it with the Prince, why am I making this video about BMW? Because BMW didn't just make one great sports sedan. They built an entire legacy around it. While others might introduce a driver-focused model or two, BMW built their entire philosophy around the connection between car and driver. Their brilliance wasn't creating the concept, it was perfecting and popularizing it. They took the sports sedan from a niche product to a global phenomenon. You see, they didn't just sell cars, they sold driving pleasure. And they built an entire business around it. The 02 Series was proof that a lightweight, well-balanced, rear-wheel drive sedan was the recipe. But BMW wasn't satisfied. They wanted to push it even further, and to do that, they had to learn the hard way. It all started in 1972 with the creation of BMW Motorsport. You see, this wasn't just a racing team, it was the foundation of something much bigger. Their first masterpiece, the 3.0 CSL, purely a homologation special built to win on track. It laid the foundation for every M car to follow. But even before the M badge existed, BMW was already experimenting with something radical. In 1973, the 2002 Turbo arrived. Europe's first turbocharged production car. White fenders, bold graphics, and 170 horsepower in a tiny chassis. It was a weapon, but it was also bad timing. The oil crisis hit and suddenly a turbocharged sports sedan seemed reckless. Sales tanked, and just 1,672 were built before BMW pulled the plug. A brutal failure, but one that hinted at something bigger. Meanwhile, the competition was evolving. Volkswagen launched the GTI and redefined affordable performance. Saab perfected turbocharging for the road, but BMW? They still had unfinished business with race cars. So in 1978, they built something unexpected. The M1. A mid-engined Italian-designed supercar, powered by the legendary M88 inline-6. This was supposed to take BMW to the top of the racing world. Instead, it was a disaster. Delays, mismanagement, and a failed Lamborghini partnership meant by the time the M1 was ready, its competition had already moved on. And as a road car, it was a hard sell. It was too raw for BMW buyers and not exotic enough for Ferrari and Lamborghini customers. Just 453 were built. But the M1 wasn't a failure. It was a lesson. You see, BMW realized they didn't need to build supercars. They needed to make their everyday cars feel special. So in 1981, they dropped a slightly downtuned version of M1's engine into a sedan, the E12 M535i. This was the first real M car for the street, and it set the stage for the first M5 in 1985. Both proved that BMW could blend motorsport DNA with real-world usability. But at that time, the idea of a high-performance sedan was still new. Enthusiasts still craved sports cars, while luxury buyers prioritized comfort. That, along with sky-high costs and BMW M's low profile, meant only 2,241 M5s were built. But BMW wasn't done. They had one more experiment to try. So in 1986, BMW released it, the E30 M3. This was it, the ultimate expression of their racing obsession. Designed to dominate touring car racing, it had boxy fenders, stiffened chassis, and a high-revving S14 four-cylinder. And it worked! The results were undeniable. The E30 M3 won the World Touring Car Championship in its debut year. It dominated the German DTM series. It won the European Touring Car Championship. It even conquered endurance races like 24 Hours of Nürburgring and Spa. With more than 1,400 victories, it remains the most successful touring car ever built. That car literally raced on Sundays and, well, kind of, sold on Mondays. You see, that high-revving S14 four-cylinder left people scratching their heads when the 325i had a smoother, torquier inline-six. And with the horsepower gap between them being small, the M3 felt like a harder justification for daily driving. You see, at that time, BMW could have looked at the sales numbers of their M cars and thought, maybe hardcore performance isn't what people want. Maybe we should just focus on building comfortable cars. But instead of giving up, they evolved the idea. So in 1992, BMW tried again. And this time, they finally got it right. The E36 M3 wasn't a homologation special. It wasn't a race car in disguise. It was a driver's car, built for the road first. Gone was the peaky four-cylinder, and in its place, a smooth, torquey inline-six. It was faster, more comfortable, and more livable. It was the M3 that everybody wanted. And with that, BMW had a clear answer. People didn't want a race car for the road. They wanted a road car with just a little bit of race car in it. They needed to build driver's cars, and they needed to make them accessible. With the E36 and at the same time the E39 5 Series, BMW's formula, perfect weight distribution, responsive steering, powerful engine, and rear-wheel drive balance became the blueprint for performance sedans. They weren't just building fast cars, they were shaping the entire industry. The Lexus IS was designed with the 3 Series as its benchmark, as admitted by the chief engineer Junichi Furuyama. Infiniti followed with the G35, targeting the same enthusiast market. Even Cadillac, once focused on soft-riding luxury, shifted gears. Former Cadillac chief engineer Dave Leone openly stated that the M5 was their benchmark for the CTS.
We wanted to have track times that would beat the M5 and the AMG E63.
And perhaps the biggest sign of BMW's influence? Even brands that traditionally ignored handling had to step up. The Peugeot 406 and Renault Laguna weren't just stylish grand tourers. They had real driving dynamics, a shift that reflected the growing importance of balance and engagement in the segment. Sure, they had fun to drive cars long before, but BMW proved that handling mattered across the entire lineup, not just in niche performance models. The Ford Mustang and Chevrolet Camaro, once obsessed with straight-line speed, became true performance machines. finally prioritizing chassis balance alongside power. Even Mercedes had to rethink its approach. The 2008 C63 AMG finally prioritized chassis balance, steering feel, and driver engagement. Why? Because the BMW M3 had set the standard, and Mercedes knew they had to keep up. Because if you wanted to be taken seriously as a driver's car, you had to compete with BMW. And here's where we come to the main question. What if BMW never existed? Or to put it better, what if BMW's approach have never gained traction? Would the idea of a true sports sedan have simply faded away? Not quite, but it wouldn't have been the same. You see, BMW didn't invent the idea of a sports sedan, but they defined it. Other brands experimented with the formula. Mercedes shocked the world with the 190e, Audi pushed all-wheel drive with the Quattro system, Lancia turned Delta into Rallya, Comfort unleashed the turbocharged Sierra Cosworth, Volvo explored turbocharged front-wheel drive in their R models, Nissan evolved the Skyline GTR, Honda perfected high-revving VTEC Screamers, and Mitsubishi and Subaru built rally weapons with their Evolution and VRX STI series. Yes, there were a lot of them, but each manufacturer had its own philosophy. Some prioritized raw speed, others cutting-edge tech, and some aimed for accessibility. Yet, despite these divergences, most brands eventually circled back to at least some version of BMW's formula. Mercedes may have taken a different approach to performance after the 190e, but today, AMG sedans emphasize handling more than ever. Audi built its identity around all-wheel drive traction, yet modern RS models chase the balance and engagement BMW has always prioritized. Even Alfa Romeo, once lost in its own identity struggles, returned to making a true driver sedan with the Giulia, echoing the philosophy BMW never abandoned. What made BMW special is that they offered consistency. A decades-long commitment to a specific vision of driving experience, one that emphasized balance, precision, feedback, and comfort. However, it's also worth noting that BMW's success wasn't driven purely by its engineering. It was also about image and marketing. The Ultimate Driving Machine campaign brilliantly positioned the brand in the minds of consumers. For every enthusiast bringing out an M3 on a back road, there were several owners who never revved past 3000 RPM. Treating their 3 Series as just another luxury badge. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. The prestige factor is what allowed BMW to keep building enthusiast-friendly cars in the first place. You see, their balance of luxury and performance set them apart from brands that lean too far in either direction. However, influence flowed both ways. BMW embraced turbocharging after its widespread success in motorsport and performance tuning. And despite years of prioritizing rear-wheel drive, BMW eventually adopted all-wheel drive, recognizing its advantages after Audi, Nissan, Porsche, and others had already proven its potential. Also, Porsche has always been dedicated to performance and driver engagement, while brands like Nissan and Mazda have long championed lightweight sports cars. By the early 90s, Mazda had reignited global interest in affordable roadsters with the Miata. You see, before that, small roadsters had basically disappeared due to tightening regulations and shifting consumer preferences. The Miata proved the formula still worked, and its success likely influenced BMW's decision to introduce the Z3 in 1995. Meanwhile, entire car cultures evolved independently. The rise of JDM tuning and drifting scene, originating from Japan, introduced an entirely different philosophy of driving enjoyment. Similarly, the hot hatch movement, led by the Volkswagen GTI, proved that front-wheel drive cars could also deliver engaging performance at an accessible price point. Still, BMW's influence is undeniable. Without them, the automotive world and the very idea of a driver's car might look very different today. You see, before BMW's rise, car enthusiasm was largely split between luxury and hardcore sports cars. The idea that a sedan could be thrilling, that practicality and performance could coexist, was one of BMW's greatest contributions. Well, and Alfa's. And at this point, I know what you're thinking. Is this just a long-ass BMW commercial? Look, I get it. This might seem like a love letter to BMW, and in some ways it is. But let's not pretend they're perfect. In fact, there's plenty to criticize. BMW has made some incredible cars, but they've also made some baffling decisions. Their once simple lineup has exploded into an alphabet soup of models that barely make sense. Their styling has become divisive, to put it kindly. And while they still claim to be the ultimate driving machine, some models feel more like the ultimate suburban status symbol. There's also the undeniable fact that BMW, like any company, follows the money. They didn't keep making engaging cars just for enthusiasts. They did it because it sold. The moment the market shifts, so does BMW. That's why we now have an XM instead of a lightweight M car. But here's the thing. While BMW has made some questionable choices, they've also done something most brands haven't. They've tried to keep the driving experience alive. While many manufacturers have pivoted entirely to crossovers and lifeless electric appliances, BMW still offers manual transmissions, inline-six engines, and rear-wheel drive. But what's even more impressive is that this commitment to driving feel isn't just reserved for M cars. Even the base 3 series still carries the fundamentals of a well-balanced engaging chassis, something that's become increasingly rare. That doesn't mean they're perfect, it just means they're one of the few brands still putting up a fight. But just because they've been influential doesn't mean they will stay relevant forever. Plenty of once great car brands have lost their way, either by refusing to change or by changing so much that they've lost what made them special in the first place. So the real question is, can BMW keep up? Can they stay true to their driving philosophy in a world shifting towards electrification, automation, and software-driven cars? Now, BMW faces its biggest shift yet. The Neue Klasse signals a new era, but can an electric BMW still be the ultimate driving machine? Heavy battery packs challenge agility, iconic engines are disappearing, and the mechanical connection between car and driver is fading. But BMW doesn't just seem to be adapting. It looks like they're trying to shape the future on their own terms. The Neue Klasse suggests a return to a more focused design philosophy, and BMW M appears to be investing heavily in keeping driving feel alive in an electric world. Whether that effort actually pays off remains to be seen. But one thing is certain, BMW's past influence on car culture is undeniable. For over 50 years they've pushed the idea that driving should be more than just transportation. They didn't just build fast cars, they built cars that made people feel something. But if they never existed, would any of this even matter? Let me know what you think in the comments, and if you enjoyed this video, please consider subscribing, it really helps me out a lot. So thank you for watching, and I'll see you in the next video.
We've been hearing a lot lately about the new performance luxury sedans from the Japanese, Nissan's Infiniti and Toyota's Lexus models. They, along with Honda's Acura line, were introduced to grab a chunk of the marketplace that was pioneered by the makers of the car next to me, BMW.
No other car maker offers quite the same mixture of European performance and prestige as BMW, and the 525 is a bargain.
But everybody who's buying any kind of car should somehow get to try one of these, and they would forever be changed, their attitudes towards any other car. You'd never sit in a Cutlass again and think it was
I was going to throw in, especially the executives at General Motors. I mean, they should be driving this car, never mind about Cadillacs and Buicks.
Well,
and also
one hopes that they do, because the car is so well conceived. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, everything is so right about it. It's just a beautiful car. The only car that I'd probably like better would be the M5.
That's right. Well, we have to cut off now.